Today, taking time to visit with State Senator Jesse Green on a little legislative review program for you. And first of all, Senator, thanks for taking time to visit.
You bet. Always a pleasure, Jim.
Well, it's been another busy week for you down at the legislature. We did the funnel, and you've had a lot of activity going, a lot of things passing out of one chamber, go over to the other, and trying to get that business taken care of. Making good progress on that?
Well, this is definitely the busiest time of session. The reason why is because we have another deadline coming here in 2 weeks, the second funnel, which means the first funnel, you have to get your bill out of full committee to survive the first funnel. Then by second funnel, you will have convinced, you will have needed to convince your majority leader to run your bill off the floor of your respective chamber, and then it needs to go over and be out of the next committee, full committee, by the second funnel. So that's a very tight window. So tensions are high at the Capitol. People want to get their stuff passed out of their chambers and have the conversations on the other side. A lot of bills die in the first funnel, but a lot more die in the second funnel.
Yeah.
If you do happen to get your bill out of your respective chamber just sometime within this session, then it's still a live round for the next session next year in the other chamber. So it's not the end of the world. But one of my bills is very time sensitive, and so I've had to have quite a few conversations this week on it. And it's in regards to equestrian trails and allowing more access to land for horse riders in the state of Iowa. And the reason it's time sensitive is because there's a component to my bill that would form a task force that would need to come back with a policy by December 1st and need to work it out with the DNR and the right officials. That way, it would create less work for me next session to put a bill together and run into less hurdles that way. And so because of the sensitivity of that time, I've been working hard on that bill. But this week, though, in local government, we didn't have any bills to run out of my committee. That's the committee that I chair.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate to be able to bring in Debbie Durham, our economic development director, to talk about housing. And that was a great presentation that she gave and to help shape our minds on that issue. And the three fun stats that I think everybody should know coming out of that conversation that I learned that day was, I don't think this is a good stat, but 53% of Iowans spend 50% or more of their income on housing. That's, to me, that's a kind of a shocking number, because the next stat is we have the most affordable housing in the United States. That's a very good stat. So that just means people are buying a lot bigger houses than they probably need. Mm-hmm. But the third stat is we have the eighth oldest houses in the United States, and so that might surprise some, might not, but those three stats right there, I think, really shape one's mind when it comes to our housing situation and where we need to go with that. So I really appreciate her coming in, and that's what started our week off this week.
Yeah, that's one of the things you had said early on. You were hoping to be able to take a look at some possibilities on making some improvements. Because you were you guys got a chance to take a look at 3D housing.
Yeah, that was one of the first presentations that we were able to get in local government was on 3D housing technology. And I think that is going to be the key in Iowa to building the housing that we need and improving our housing situation so we don't have the eighth oldest houses in the United States. It's a very cheap, economical way to build a house. It saves, I believe, on 30% on your energy costs when you do it that way. But the big question on 3D housing is the longevity of the housing. Like, what does that housing look like in 50 to 100 years? Will it still be as strong as normal housing? That's seems to be the question on most people's minds.
Just to see if it does have the lifespan, since we do have that number of, again, eighth oldest with houses. And, you know, I would say I would be surprised by that, but I happened to go to the Ogden City Council meeting, and they had a housing study done on their community. Similar kind of numbers showing up, similar kind. Yeah, so
yeah.
It's pretty across the state, the way it looks.
And so what you see with that, the big challenge in rural Iowa with the housing is developers go to Ankeny and different places like that, because you can get, you know, maybe a third to a half, 50% more, and sometimes maybe 100% more on selling that house. So there's more profit building there. And so a lot of our programs are intended to create tax credits for these developers to incentivize them to go out into rural Iowa, like the Ogdens of the world and stuff like that. So the real key to getting a better housing in rural Iowa, I believe, is improving those tax credits to incentivize developers to go into rural Iowa, but then also having that local component where they're being active and reaching out to these developers to create plans. And I think in a lot of these small communities, you see a little bit of apathy on some with local officials where they're not being proactive and having those conversations and developing plans. But you have other communities like Ogden and Madrid that are doing a fantastic job at that.
Yeah, pursuing that, and it's we've seen that it does kind of get into that that mindset. Well, why are we going to try to fight this? Because, you know, part of it is also having some of the resources that you're looking for, water, sewer, the infrastructure, and stuff like that. So communities do have to look at doing some spending to be able to go ahead with some of that. But yeah, that's good. Yeah. That's good to make some progress, because I know when you started the session, that was one of the things it was on your mind, was how do we address some of these issues and continue to deal with some of these issues for rural parts of the state.
Well, and one reason that kind of drove my thinking on talking about that within local governments, I also sit on appropriations, that kind of ties into my mind as I go through session, like what can I be doing on appropriations to help this situation out, as well as being on local government. But you're talking about spending and infrastructure and stuff like that. That leads into probably the most sensitive topic that's going to be coming out of session, one of two, as property taxes and pipelines. But in regards to property taxes, on local government, that's going to be the most sensitive issue. And even though I don't really deal with that with much in local government committee, it's more of a ways and means.
Yeah.
This next Monday at 1:30, I'm going to have one of our local supervisors, Mark Campbell from Webster County. He's president of ISAC, representing the supervisors. And he's going to come in and do a presentation about property taxes from his point of view and try to help facilitate that conversation, at least within my committee.
Mm-hmm. And those are, yeah, we know that that's going to be an ongoing thing. We saw, you know, I saw the survey this week that said that people feel property taxes are too high. They haven't said what services they want to get rid of, but, yeah. You know, those, and you know, from watching all of this information, that is something you have to deal with. And you've talked about the assessment issue that's going on. There's a law and a formula that they're supposed to follow, so.
Yeah, assessors assess property, and we just need to get down to how we put our budgets together. Or do we have some levies that are unused that should be being used? Mm-hmm. You know, diversify those revenues. Lastly, are there things that we can trim? You know, they're basically on the county level. That's pretty cut and dry on some of that stuff. Those are pretty essential services, mm-hmm. but. It does seem to be a lot different conversation between the city administrators and elected officials and the county officials. To me, it feels like there's two different situations happening and different issues and problems there. So from my perspective, that's what I hope to learn as we go forward in session, is trying to get a better grip on the variety of issues each level of government faces.
Well, on the Senate side, you guys have been talking about coming up with a plan to eliminate income tax.
Yeah, that kind of came out of nowhere. That was interesting, that bill. I think they just passed it out of committee yesterday.
Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to look at it, but I was really surprised to see that. And Senator Dawson's very proactive when it comes to getting ahead of these conversations and making sure that we have vehicles in place with bills to facilitate some of this. So, you know, that's very realistic that we could become one of those states that don't have an income tax. And that's a pretty cool conversation to have, that we're in that position. But on the same time, that puts a little bit of pressure in my mind on the sales tax conversation. But I think that's why Dawson is proposing this, is he's one that is not afraid of the sales tax conversation and having that 3/8 of a penny go to I will. And so in his philosophy of taxes, that's why he's being realistically in his mind. He feels that we could probably get rid of the income tax because I don't think he's as afraid of the sales tax conversation as other people.
Sure, yeah. Well, and I tell you what, it's all pretty cumbersome when you start getting into total elimination. Going to the flat tax and reducing the rate, that was one part of it. But taking the next step, that's an interesting thought, too. And each state is a little bit different on how they want to handle it and what they want to do. So we'll see. I know there's some that like doing the sales tax part. There's others that kind of avoid it. And different communities have different things that they've set up with that. So you've got
The reality is property taxes are your most stable taxes, and so that's where you want your most essential services. The second level would be the income tax, where that's not as volatile of a tax. That revenue to the state is not as volatile. But the sales tax is a lot more volatile. But the thing is, most people would agree that a consumption tax is a little bit healthier maybe for society than income tax, but that's debatable. The reason I'm not a huge fan of the income tax is when it was first introduced, it was promised that the government would get rid of it. It was during a time of war, and then they didn't fulfill their promises. So that plays into my mind a little bit, and so that's why I'm more of a property or a sales tax guy.
That's the notwithstanding part that shows up in there, too.
Yep.
What are some of the other things that you've been working on in your committee, or are there some other things, other bills that you've really been interested in following?
Well, so I was excited on Tuesday. I had three of my individual bills that were on the floor, and it was an interesting political situation where I got one of them to pass. It was a tattoo bill. We're one of four states that require tattoo artists to have a diploma. It sounds okay on the surface, and most people, when they saw my bill, they're like, "What in the world is this? Why are we wanting to not have people educated or whatever that are doing tattoo stuff?" Well, the reality is they have to pass other tests and educational requirements to be a tattoo artist, whether that's how to work with blood or safety issues in regards to that. So to me, having a diploma is just kind of not necessary. And the other thing is when I was talking to the Department of Public Health, they were like, "Well, you don't need to do this because we're very generous with our waivers when somebody asks for a waiver and to waive that requirement." Well, instantly, now I've been in government long enough that if somebody tells me that, it's like, well, how about we save the paper and save the time and let's get rid of that red tape. So I was excited to get that bill passed through the Senate and get it over to the House. But my other two bills got torpedoed before it reached the floor. The last minute, some people had some issues with them that I wasn't aware of, and they were able to talk our leader into pulling them last minute. And so this weekend, I have to make those sensitive calls and figure out what in the world is going on and see if I can get those bills back on the floor next week. But time is running out, and so who knows what's going to happen with those other two.
So are they at the point where you could keep them alive until next time?
My goal now with those other two that horse bill I was explaining needs to come out now.
That one.
Because it's very time sensitive. But the other two, if worst case scenario, if I could just get them out of the Senate this session and have them as live rounds for the House next year, I would be happy with that. And that's going to be my appeal to the caucus is to not let them die in our chamber this year.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's others that come to you the same thing. Can you move this out so we can at least keep it alive till next time and do more work later? Because, we know it's just you get done certain things. Speaking of saving paper, let's talk about the consolidation of the agencies. That's off to the governor. The House moved it out. You guys moved it out fairly early. People don't like change, so this kind of throws a lot of people, "Oh my gosh, they're changing it." Well, are they?
There's a lot of change, and I was really surprised. It sounds like the House passed our bill without any changes. That's absolutely remarkable when you're talking 1,600 pages. So the 30,000-foot view is we haven't reorganized our government in 40 years. You know, what business or what family has not had to reorganize some things within a 40-year time frame? Yeah. And so I think it was long overdue. The positives, there's a lot of positives. There's roughly about $200 million that's going to save the taxpayer every year. That's absolutely remarkable. That's enough to pay for our increases in SSA, for example, for education every single year. That's phenomenal. But it would cut our cabinet's heads down from 37 to, I believe, 16. And I think what brought this up is because of COVID, and there was a lack of communication or hard communication happening during that stressful time. And so that revealed some of the weaknesses within those department heads as far as getting information to the right people and stuff. So, but the concerns I've had, honestly, within the Democrats and Republicans are when you have strong leaders like Reynolds, Branstad, and even Vilsack. Vilsack was a very respected governor as far as his effectiveness of leading different departments. They, both Democrats and Republicans, think that this will help strengthen our governments now under those types of leaders. But both sides will admit, like, if you have a governor like Colbert that was not as
not as effective,
disrespectfully, but he wrestled a little bit more with communications. In an environment like that, this thinner government of cabinets positions and stuff like that might have some negative consequences. So those are some fun conversations that are happening behind the scenes about it.
All right. Okay. Well, what are we looking at here next week as we hit springtime? You know, spring's going to be here Monday, so we're ready to keep going here. You're 1 week closer to the second funnel.
Yeah, no, next week is going to be a lot of sensitive conversations because after that, you have your full committees the week after that they need to pass out bills. A lot of subcommittees will happen next week and a lot of tough conversations and some people will be disappointed, some people will be happy next week. So
let's see, I was looking, did we got our last the revenue estimating the information came out, didn't it, for March? We're sitting, you guys are sitting, I mean, looking pretty solid moving forward.
Well, what I was so pleased with is we knew that because of our tax cuts, some of our tax cuts being implemented now, that we were going to see a dip in our revenues. Well, our revenue only dropped 0.5% compared to a year ago, despite enacting some of these tax cuts. And it's estimated that about $3,500 per retiree is being pumped back into the economy. And that's what's is happening with this. And so I think that's incredible news. It just shows that the sky is not falling, like the opposition says, and there was definitely room for trimming within our government, and the taxpayers are definitely pumping money back into the economy, and our pie is growing. So, really great news on that.
That's so many things. It's we'll go this way, and the proof will be in the pudding. We'll find out just how things are, how they are when they come together, and that's what we got to do is wait and see what it is. So, I do appreciate you taking time visiting with us, letting us know what's happening. Folks, if they come down to the legislature, make sure they get contact with you so you can show them around.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure, and 1:30 on Monday is going to be our local government committee where we'll have that presentation. Come on down and say hi. I'm going to have some local officials from Dayton. That's one thing we didn't talk about during this episode is they just got awarded an $800,000 Destination Iowa grant for the Dayton Rodeo.
Yeah, they did.
Absolutely fantastic news. And so some of them are going to come down to thank the governor and get a tour of the Capitol. The other thing is I'll be speaking on March 28th, I believe it is. It's going to be Convention of States Day at the Hill. I'll be speaking with Rick Santorum and some other figures and about the need for that. So a lot of fun coming in the next couple weeks. Never be shy. Feel free to reach out anytime.
All righty. Thanks so much for visiting with us this week.
You bet. Always a pleasure. Thanks, Jim.
State Senator Jesse Green, our guest on the program today.